Hello, everyone, and welcome to our Friday Forum webinar. I'm Marianne Stumbaugh, Assistant Director of Alumni Career Services here at the Alumni Association at UVA, and I'm glad you have joined us for today's Friday Forum. You can type your questions into the chat box at the lower left of your screen at any time. After you type your question, be sure to hit enter in order for it to show up in the chat window for everyone to see. Our presenter will take questions during his presentation as well as at the end of the webinar as time allows. Our webinar host today is UVA alum Brent Peterson, who comes to us from right down the road in Richmond. Brent received his master's degree from UVA's McIntyre School of Commerce in 2000 and is currently a senior project manager for the Federal Reserve Bank. Brent is also the author of the Stand and Inspire blog and the creator of a job seeker toolkit called Interview Angel. Brent is an active public speaker, having been interviewed several times on network television and spoken to audiences at several Virginia universities. So it is obvious that Brent has a strong desire to help people acquire the tools and inspiration they need for success, which is what brings him here today. Brent's webinar is about our habits and the effect those habits can have on our careers. He will tell us about five essential leadership habits that we can put into practice today. So here is Brent Peterson with five habits to ignite your career.
Thank you, Marianne. I appreciate the kind introduction. Let me, there you go, turn off my own speaker so that I don't have to have an echo. Let me advance to the first slide. Can everyone see the slide and hear me okay? Thank you, Anne. That's a yes. Thank you, Doris. Okay, I just wanted to make sure. So my name is Brent Peterson, and I am a McIntyre grad. It feels like yesterday, but I just realized because Marianne said so, it was 13 years ago, so time flies. And as I mentioned to her, I do remember the day because that was the date my first daughter was born. I actually came to the hospital for orientation. On that exact day. So I kind of got a round of applause just for showing up, but it made for a memorable start to my graduate work at UVA. So I want to go ahead and get started. I have a lot of things to talk about, and I want to make good use of everybody's time. And again, I just want to reiterate my gratitude to all of you for taking the time to join in this afternoon or this morning, wherever you may be calling in from. It's very humbling to have you join in. And with that being said, let's kind of get started with talking a little bit about, I'll talk a little bit more about myself. So, let's see, there we go. So, in a lot of windows, if you will, this is my online profile photo. And in fact, we all kind of start this way. But truth be told, this is actually me. When you see me and on the video screen, but this is also the avatar of me by day at the work at the Federal Reserve Bank. I'm on vacation today, but have been working for the Federal Reserve for the past 6 years. But if you go online to my blog, Stand Inspire, LinkedIn, Google+, Twitter, Pinterest, Facebook, you name it, that's also me. And the same person, and certainly there's value in consistency, but the reality is, we are in a culture whereby we are defining most of our relationships with people by just that, an avatar of someone smiling. So it's always nice to have a smiling face, but in reality, that's not reality. So let me kind of give you a quick slideshow of the real Brent, the guy behind the smiling photo. So I'm not just the guy trapped inside his iPhone. That's my wife, Eve. She's also a UVA grad. We actually met in undergraduate school at James Madison, and we both went on to grad school at UVA. Her degree is in cognitive psychology. That's my three daughters in front of Sweet Frog, if you're familiar with the yogurt place. That was on my birthday, I guess over a year ago after we went skiing. Those are my three girls at the Folk Festival in downtown Richmond. That's a good plug, so don't miss it if you're in the area this October. I also like to take pictures of my name. I know it's kind of a weird thing, but it's kind of fun because my mom always told me, well, I named you Brent so that it would be unique. Well, I have met a few Brents in the world, and actually, since joining LinkedIn when it first started and securing my URL of, you know, /in/Brent Peterson, there's been 216 additional Brent Petersons to join LinkedIn. So I know I'm not alone, but I do like finding pictures with my name on it. So if you ever come across any, do share. I'd love to add to my fun collection and post it on Pinterest. Those are my folks. They're in Inner Harbor. I grew up in Maryland. And a huge Baltimore Orioles fan. I love to go cycling. I love to go skiing. That's my dog, Foster. Doesn't usually snow that much here in Richmond, but it has before. That's my beautiful wife, Eve, again. And that's actually probably the best portrait of me at this stage of my life, with the gray hairs, the headache, the worry lines, the sock in the hole, the hole in my socks, and certainly with three daughters, the empty wallet. But this is also me, and this is my daughter in the hospital, who was diagnosed with childhood epilepsy a year ago, and it's something we still manage every day. But the reality is life can be and is a roller coaster for my family, and I'm sure it is for your family as well. So sometimes you can find me deep in thought. I've certainly discovered my blog to be a great outlet to share thoughts with the world and to get feedback from great folks like all of you. But there is the fun side of me, the Orioles fan with Elmo. So I like to think most days are just like this. But in reality, most weekends are like this, where I just want to crash. But we're going to talk about habits today, and I thought this was a good segue to see how funny how things kind of repeat themselves in terms of where we are today with the internet and social media and the like. But I found this great cartoon, if you will, that said the internet's a lot like ancient Egypt, where people were writing on walls and worshiping cats. And if you're active on Google Plus like I am, you'll discover people really do strangely worship cats on Catter Day or Saturday, if you will. So if you really love cats, do check out Google Plus every Saturday. But today's presentation is not about me, and I don't want it to be about me. It is about you, and it's about your goals and your dreams, and certainly your habits is something that I want to talk about in greater detail. So who are you? Well, I do know that you're the Time Person of the Year, so congratulations on that. And I know that you have goals. I know you have dreams, and for folks who are UVA alum, JMU alum, and certainly representatives from schools all over the country and the world, congratulations. You've come a long way, and you have important dreams, and I want to help you achieve those. I do a lot of coaching in the area of project management, something that I'm passionate about, and I'm going to tie that into our presentation. But I also know that life and your life is not all about dreams and success and happiness and all that kind of stuff, that you're fighting a tough battle. I know I am, we all are, and I think with that being, you know, said, there's more to my life, there's more to your life behind that profile photo on Twitter, on LinkedIn, Facebook, Pinterest, and certainly at your own place of work. So let's talk about habits and the impact and how it all ties together. And let me kind of sort of give you a little bit more information, kind of like, well, how did my career and, you know, sort of lead me to this point? Well, as I mentioned, my daughter's illness sort of led me to a lot of discovery and research scientifically, which has been a great discovery, as well as some other illness in the family. And you kind of go, okay, what's going on? I kind of, you know, I want more answers. And it's wonderful in today's day and age that we're all one Google search away from being an expert in everything, right? And from that, realized that there was a great connection between what we accomplish, what we don't accomplish, what we have in life, what we don't have in life as it relates to our habits. And the blog that I started just earlier this year in January, called Stand and Inspire, standinspire.com, the purpose of which is to equip you with habits that you can put into place today. You can practice them. You can give it a shot for a while. We're going to talk about how long it takes for them to stick. And you can give me feedback, and that's and that's the greatest gift that anyone could offer me and to other readers as far as what I'm doing and trying to do. But I want to equip people with different habits and to open up people's minds intellectually, spiritually, and I hope you decide to check out the blog after today's presentation, and you can, if you like, it'd be great to subscribe to it. I send out an update once a week every Wednesday just to announce a new blog post, and if one is of interest to you, just check it out. But in terms of habits, our day is basically made up of what we do day in and day out. And we have a set cue, we have a routine, and then we have a reward. For most of us, a cue may simply be the time the alarm clock goes off. When the alarm clock goes off, you have that sets into motion a set routine. You get out of bed. Get out of bed, go to the restroom, grab my stuff, load up my gym bag, get in the car. There's multiple steps involved here. But the point is, to get from the alarm clock going off to being at the gym, to working out, to getting dressed, getting showered, to getting to work, doesn't sort of just happen by chance, but truthfully, it really happens without thinking. And we're going to talk about kind of three common characteristics about habits in a minute. Now, the very theme and the topic of habits has been really popularized since the good work of Stephen Covey. You may be very familiar with his book. If you're one of the 15 million people, it's probably more than that, who have read and studied his good work in The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. You may know that Stephen Covey unfortunately passed away this past summer, not this summer, but a year ago, from complications from a cycling accident in Utah. He was in his 70s, as I recall, but a great thought leader and someone who certainly brought to the popular sort of thinking as far as the impact of our habits. So if you're familiar with Stephen Covey's work, he has the 7 habits of highly effective people, or in this case, highly effective nuns. What's interesting about his habit model is that 5 of the 7 habits are explicit communication habits. And I like to talk a lot about communication habits. Why? Because that really drives a lot of our success in our careers. And we're going to talk about that in further detail. But the habits are as follows: to be proactive, to begin with the end in mind, to put first things first, think win-win, seek first to understand, synergize, and sharpen the saw. Just a great foundational model. You've probably seen it before, and hopefully you've put it into practice. Now, the very theme of habits is getting even more sort of publicity, and that's a wonderful thing, in part because of the work here that was published in this great book. It was the New York Times bestseller, I guess technically in 2012. Duhigg is the author. And his central argument is that our habits can be changed if we understand, and only if we understand exactly how our habits work. Now, the book itself, The Power of Habit, which is a great resource, I highly recommend it, is outlined in 3 parts: our habits as individuals, our habits as far as organizations, and our habits as society. Based on his research, it's estimated that 40% of every decision we make on a daily basis is based on our habits, and that's based on a Duke University study in 2006. Now, all of our habits are actually stored in a I need a little prop here, a golf ball. But the basal ganglia is part of our brain, about right here, right across the forehead. It's a golf ball size mass of tissue. This is sort of your storage center, your data center for all of your habits, all the habits that you've developed, all the habits that you continue to this day, those you've broken. They're kind of hard-coded into our brain, which is just an amazing sort of evolution and discovery of who we are, and in my opinion, sort of the God-given sort of growth of our brains. But the truth is, our brains do grow every single day. They also can kind of break down based on the connections we have with other people and the decisions that we make. That's just how the brain works. It continues to grow. Clearly, the brain that we have, size of our brain today, and the habits that are stored inside or hard-coded into our brain are different from, say, the day we were born, when we were 10 years old, 20, 30, 40, and so on. So cool stuff that goes on inside our brains every single day. And as I mentioned, this is actually based on MIT research, that every habit has a cue. It could be an alarm clock. It could be when your stomach rumbles because you're hungry. It could have been a cue because you got an alert to say, oh, that's right, I signed up for this webinar this afternoon today, and set into motion a routine. And I assume this isn't probably the first time that you've participated in a session like this, but the point is you're here today for one very clear reason. It's because the expectation that there's going to be reward, and there is, in the sense that I want to plant some seeds with you today so that you can discover, well, I didn't know that. That's something to think about. I want to go deeper on that. But the time we have today, there's, you know, we only can go so deep. But if nothing more, I want to equip you with some knowledge, some research, and hopefully some habits that you can set into motion. Another great resource that was released in 2000 and the end of last year is a great book by British psychologist Jeremy Dean. Jeremy Dean runs a very popular blog, you can look it up, that really all focused on habits. And the premise of his book was a fun one, which basically set out to debunk the myth of how long it takes to form a habit. Now, if we listen to the marketing and the general consensus, we would say, well, how long does it take to make a habit or to break one? The answer generally is 21 days. But truth be told, that's actually not true. That actually goes back to a publication by a surgeon who fitted amputees with replacement limbs, went into the whole self-help work, and based on his research, which is fine, he'd estimated it takes 21 days for people to kind of get the sensation that the replacement limb was actually their old, old part of their body. Maybe the case doesn't mean it holds for every habit. So truth is, 21 days to form a habit is a myth. In actuality, based on recent research, it takes 66 days. Again, some habits take less time. Other habits may take over a year, but do know that 21 days is nothing more than a great marketing myth, and you certainly can look up all the great advertisements that you can see regarding, taking the Listerine 21-day habit test and the like. It's great for marketing. It's not real life. Now, in his book, there are three kind of components of habits, or three characteristics. Number one, that doesn't require any conscious deliberation, kind of like driving the car. You kind of just do it. You know how to get there, and before you realize it, you didn't even think about the fact that you've now driven 15 miles to work. You parked your car and you're walking into the office. It just happens. It's non-emotional. And then thirdly, it is context-driven. When we get in our car, we drive to certain places, we see certain stoplights, we know whether to turn right or left. When you walk into a Starbucks, if you will, the context is going to trigger certain cues. Maybe it's food-related, maybe it's beverage-related. But again, every habit has three characteristics: no conscious deliberation, it's non-emotional, and it's context-driven. Now, the whole habit sort of market is growing. Carolyn Joyce Myers has released a whole series of book DVDs and the like on habits, I guess, more sort of Christian-based in her case. I haven't read her works, but she's not the only one jumping on the bandwagon, but I think it's a great thing. There's other related books. Kelly McGonigal, she's a professor, a visiting professor at Stanford, and she published a great book. This book is effectively the guide or the curriculum behind her program, which is, according to the book and the website, the most popular and the most requested course in the continuing education program at Stanford University, called The Science of Willpower. Great resource, something to check out as well. It's not the first book, nor will it be the last book written on willpower. And as I mentioned, I want to kind of tie in and then quickly go into how this relates to your career. We're going to talk about communication, because I think that's a habit that just happens automatically. Right now I'm talking to you. I can't see you. I can't control whether you're listening or multitasking or the like, but hopefully I can pique your interest enough to look up and to discover some interesting things about how we make decisions, or for that matter, don't make decisions. Now, how much of communication is verbal? Well, it's estimated about a third of it, which is a real interesting fact. Probably seen this since grade school, simply because we are now in a sort of work environment and relationship-based environment where so much of our communication, there's not a nonverbal component. You may be able to see me here on the video, but I can't see you. So it makes things a little bit difficult, but the reality is, how often do we need clarification from the text message we get from our spouse, from a friend, and the like? Pretty often. Why? Because there's not a nonverbal component to it. But when you can see people, it tells a great story. But in all fairness, all of us are caught on camera when we're tired, when we're bored, when we're excited, and the like. So, that's really another identifier of our society, that we're always watching, we're always taking pictures of each other, but the nonverbal communications do tell the greater story beyond anything that you ever hear or read. But of course, you can just be a celebrity, rock star, and still be bored out of your mind, as the case is here. But here we are in the year 2013, going on 2014, where our voice, our platform is expanding across all networks through the work we do professionally, community-based, for different organizations that we support and the like. So there's no shortage of means to get our message out, but of course the question remains, is anyone reading, and what is the most effective way to reach people? The short answer is, it depends. It depends on the recipient. Some people want to hear you face-to-face. Some people just want to read what you have to say on your blog. Other people just want to catch up on your tweets. Other people want to see your Facebook statuses and the like. To each his own. That being said, if you got something to say, and I know all of you do, otherwise you wouldn't be here today. I know how important your careers are to you, and I want to support you in that regard. The reality is, one size does not fit all. But thanks to technology, we can sort of spread our message, our platform, in many different ways. But you have to be careful, of course, not to spread yourself too thin. But with that being said, we always do have texts to solve our problems. Perhaps this is a good picture of the future of keyboards, right? Because it seems like with everything that we send via email and text and the like, we have to supplement it with emoticons. And of course, the moment that you realize that you texted the wrong person, this is probably how you feel, and you've probably been there as well. And when in doubt, you always can just shut down the computer and call it a day and just relax. And hopefully, as the weather turns nicer here, and I'm sure it is for you as well, you get outside and just realize that there's a whole world out there outside of your computer. But as I like to say, if you can't solve it by email, instant message, texting, faxing, phone calls, social media, and the like, you always could resort to just meeting people in person. So lots of lots of things that we do every single day, but the truth is, how we communicate with each other is very much habit-driven. And hopefully I've shared some examples where you realize, yeah, I do that, or I'm thinking about using that, or I'm not sure, or now I know I don't connect with other people. So with that sort of introduction as far as who I am on a personal level, and I'd like to get to know you better as well through the blog, through LinkedIn, you can find me in many places, I want to talk about your career and kind of what's next for you, and I want to plant some seeds just in terms of leadership habits, and specifically today I want to focus on five. Now on my blog, my posts are all based around these five themes, so you can discover other research and ideas and topics that I'd like to share out there, but they're generally all tied to the five themes that we're going to talk about today. So with that being said, I want you guys to live like the gate's been left open. So let's go ahead and get started. First habit is imagery. sharing your dreams and sharing your ideas. In 1992, a study was commissioned on Scottish patients who had gone through hip and knee surgery, and these were patients who were kind of at the sort of, if you will, the last chapters in their lives. And did an interesting study to determine what was the effect of the patients who wrote down their goals, again after surgery, pretty serious surgery. The average age of the participants in the study was 68. And to write down, for them to write down their goals. And when I talk about goals, I'm not talking about big, lofty, hairy, audacious goals, if you will, but just simple goals, like my goal this week is to meet my spouse at the bus stop. And again, these were for patients who had gone through surgery. And what they discovered is that the participants who wrote down their goals were able to walk twice as fast as the people who didn't. And they were also were able to get out of their chairs three times as fast. Simply by writing down goals such as, my goal is to walk to the bus stop tomorrow morning to meet my wife. But simply writing down their goals, double and triple the impact as far as recovery. So it does matter. Having goals does matter. But having goals that you write down is critical as well. So at a bigger level, let me segue here. There's proven benefit of sharing your own goals, and you know, I'll tell you a little bit more about my story. When I was a kid, my goal was to play baseball for the Baltimore Orioles. So I, you know, told everyone, and my dad encouraged me to play little league and learn from coaches and continue to develop my skills. And that's exactly what I did, and played my way through high school. And still play softball actively to this day. But then when I got to high school, you know, you discover new things. I got an interstate, and I decided my goal was to, I wanted to be a stage actor. I loved the excitement and the opportunity to be in front of an audience. And I'm one of those weird people who is probably more comfortable in front of 500 people than I am in front of 5 people. So I, you know, shared that goal with my parents and my mom. You know, she offered good advice. She said, well, you know, get involved in drama, learn from coaches, discover what skills you need to develop, and that's exactly what I did, and eventually became part of a traveling theater group, traveled across the country performing. I also became involved in drama at high school, eventually became the president of my drama club and thespian society, and wrote and participated in some plays while I was an undergraduate at JMU. But it's kind of stopped there, and I kind of went a different path, and now kind of looking back, I just was trying to connect with, well, what happened? You know, I went from, you know, having this great dream and getting great feedback and getting great coaching, and discovered the reason that, if you will, my dreams had died is because I stopped sharing it with other people. So I've outlined, and there's an article on my blog about this, that there are kind of 3 reasons I feel to share your life dream. It's number 1, your friends, your family, they want to help you. And I can tell you the best career moves that I've ever made, again, within the organization I've worked for, is when I've actually opened up to my manager and said, here's what I'm interested in doing. Here are the opportunities that I'm seeking. These are the projects that I'd like to manage. I've never received any pushback from my managers to go, whoa, you know, we don't want you to do any of that kind of stuff. They go, oh, well, why don't you, for example, volunteer for this? Why don't you get involved with this committee? Why don't I talk to this person? And I've just discovered, wow, when you actually share your dreams with other people, they want to help you. They want to give you advice. So I think that's a great habit that I want to equip all of you with today, is there are people around your life that want to help you, but they can't help you if they don't know what you want. They don't know what your goals are. Second reason is by sharing your ideas with people, your vision can become even bigger because you never know, you know, how big it can be. And case in point, earlier this morning I met up with 2 leaders here in my community to share this big idea I had to organize a leadership retreat here in Central Virginia to tie it in with American history and the like. And just by talking to other people, they're like, oh, well, you need to talk to this person. Let me make a phone call for you. Let's set things in motion. And every time I have these conversations, which is never enough, I go, I should do this more. because people actually have good ideas. Oh, and they have good connections. They want to help me. And then the third reason to always share your ideas, especially with your close friends and your family members, is you want people to hold you accountable to what your dreams are. And I've also discovered that the more you share your dreams with other people, you're kind of putting yourself out there to when people call you out on it. And it's kind of great. It's kind of comical. I sometimes throw out habits and ideas on my blog, and this is actually the third blog that I've since launched, but I sometimes get emails from people from a post I wrote like 3 years ago and say, hey, Brian, how are you doing on this? And they kind of call me out on the fact that I'm not doing it well. Something as simple as like making a commitment to write a handwritten thank you note to at least two or three people every Friday. I told people to do that. I told them I would do it. I did it for a set motion. It didn't become a habit because I don't know if it would have taken 21 days or 66 days. It just didn't form, but they called me on it, so now I'm making it a habit again. So, you know, put it out there. In my case, my goal now is to sort of build this platform to equip other people with leadership habits, to build my career in public speaking, and hopefully that kind of come back to my original dream when I was in high school to get myself back on stage and now having the opportunity to do so, but it's only because I'm openly sharing these dreams with other people. So that's number one, imagery. Number two, leadership habit to ignite your career is mastery. What I call mastery of developing your craft. Great resource. If you haven't read this book, put it on your short list. I'm not promoting any of the resources. A copy of this presentation Marianne's going to make available to folks afterwards, so you'll have screenshots, if you will, of these resources that I recommend. I have nothing at stake for them. There's no kickback or anything like that. These are just good books. I believe in sharing good resources with people, and I believe in openly sharing good information on my blog every single week because I want to help people, not because there's any financial incentive. There isn't. I just want to help people. So great book called So Good They Can't Ignore You. That's actually a quote from actor, comedian, director Steve Martin, and I'm kind of pulling information here from my notes, but back, I don't remember the exact year, but Steve Martin, and hopefully everyone knows who he is, he was being interviewed, like on a talk show, and he was asked for his advice for people to become successful, you know, like Steve, and he said, well, no one ever takes note of my advice because it's not the answer they want to hear. And the host says, well, okay, what's the advice? Well, Steve Martin said, well, what they want to hear is, here's how you get an agent, here's how you write a script, but I always say, and live by this to this day, is you have to be so good they can't ignore you. And it took Steve Martin, by his estimates, 10 years to craft his act. And if you know Steve Martin and you're familiar with his work back in the 70s, as I recall, or 80s with Saturday Night Live, he set himself out to be different and to really stand out, and to his words, to be so good they couldn't ignore him. But he said, by his estimates, it took him 10 years. And I think that's a key message that I subscribe to. Certainly, Cal Newport promotes in this book. Now, Cal Newport is the author, that's the younger guy on the slide. Cal Newport is a professor of computer science at Georgetown University. Why did he write a book on career success? I don't know. But he's an active blogger. He's a great thought leader, and he wrote a great book. And my story is, I was actually walking into Barnes & Noble around Christmas this past year, kind of looking for my proverbial parachute, if you will, and kind of found it, of course, the latest edition of that book, and read it and kind of nodded and said, yeah, well, that makes sense. And then I noticed Cal Newport's book, which actually debunks the theory in his argument that if you just follow your passion, you'll be successful. He says that's a myth. That's not true. He actually feels that if you leverage what he calls your career capital, where you have skills, where you have relationships, from there your passion will manifest. So it kind of reverses the whole logic on that. Great resource, something I subscribe to, but simply based on Steve Martin's advice, which is you want to be so good they can't ignore you. So the takeaway that I want to leave you with today, a number of them, but I'll plant as many seeds as time permits, is that you need to think about, and I've kind of outline kind of two questions. You know, when you're thinking about and daydreaming about what your dreams are, and if you do it on a daily basis, let me tell you, you're normal. Because I do it on a daily basis. The very fact that you're taking time out of your lunch break or your morning to join in on this webinar means, you know what, you've got some big ideas. Maybe they're not happening right now in your life. That's normal. That's my life. That's your life. We're normal people. But I'm here to tell you that, or to ask two questions for you to answer, and that is, does the goal align with your existing skills and relationships? Okay. If it doesn't, that's not a roadblock. Well, it's a roadblock, but it's not the end of the road. And then the second question, which ties to Newport's book, which is, what would it take for you to be so good that you can't be ignored in whatever it is? And again, the book, you know, supports this theory, any book would. You know, as far as your own premise about, you know, case studies of, you know, the person who quit her corporate job to start a yoga studio, and that makes great headlines for the New York Times and makes articles very likable and tweetable and the like, but doesn't tell you the whole story that the person ended up going out of business simply because, you know, because that person didn't have career capital when the going gets tough. So that's kind of the premise of that book. Another thing that I want to highlight as it relates to mastery, and I kind of already hit on this, but I'll kind of move quickly, and that is to ask for advice that matters. I've actually published some articles on my blog. You can check it out in further detail. There's some great research that's been published on the Harvard blog in conjunction with research done at BYU as far as, you know, the values career-wise for asking for advice. Hopefully I've already outlined some situations for you. But if you check it out on my blog, there's some great examples about, you know, asking for advice that matters. So let me kind of share with you kind of a quick summary. This is from the Harvard Law School on Program on Negotiation. Basically, you want to express your competencies first before you go ask for advice. What that simply means is, okay, you go to your manager, you know, for advice. The key thing first is to say, well, here's what steps I've already taken, or here's what I've already learned, here's what I've already set in motion. So you're kind of defining, hey, I'm a go-getter. I'm not just coming to you with a problem, can you solve it, but rather say, here's what I'm doing, but I'm stuck. You know, based on research that's done at BYU, they've identified that if you start with your competencies first, you're going to get a much better response. Number two is to make your request very specific. It's one thing to say, hey, can you help me with my career? I don't know what to do. You know, I get stumped there too when people ask me that. Sometimes I get emails from people who read my blog for career advice, and I'm always humbled and happy to respond as many messages as I can. But sometimes I go, okay, brother, can you just share with me some more information? I respond back with some specific questions, and then when I get specific answers back, then I can provide some better advice. So do keep that in mind. And then thirdly, which is a great reminder, is to kind of frame the advice request in terms of the exclusivity of the request. What I mean is, when you go to somebody, go to them and tell them why you're going to them. Go to them and tell them, hey, I notice you've been doing this. I notice how you handle these meetings. I know how you work with this customer. It seems like you're getting a good response. I'd like to learn more from you. So frame the exclusivity of your request. All right. Number three. Empathy. Again, number one, imagery. Number two, mastery. Number three, empathy. Wear other people's shoes. But truth is, we don't do it very well. I just published some great research on my blog about this. Don't know if we have any fans of Manchester United. Manchester United, by most measurements, is the most popular and also the most valuable professional organization, sports team on the planet, and Man U has a few fans to put it bluntly. And a great study was done in London recently involving Man U fans. And so what they did is they brought fans in to fill out a questionnaire about their team. So maybe you're not a Manchester United fan, but you know, you're a Washington Redskins fan or a Cowboys fan or a New York Yankees fan, and you're asking questions about your favorite team, you can probably get pretty jazzed about that. And then they instructed the participants to go across campus to another building to continue the research. That's all they knew. Now, on the way to the other building, a person, a jogger, ran past them and unfortunately slipped and fell and hurt his leg and screamed down in pain. What the participants didn't know is that they were secretly being studied. What the study was really about is how they would react when they saw somebody who got hurt when they were walking across campus as part of the study. Here's what they found out, which is really interesting, because they put different shirts on the participants, three different. One, where the runner was wearing a Manchester United jersey. Number two, where the participant was wearing just a white t-shirt, so nothing distinguishable. Or number three, when the participant was wearing a Liverpool shirt, which is Manchester United's league rival. Now, when the runner who fell down got hurt was wearing the Manchester U t-shirt, 92% of the participants ran to his aid. When the person just had on a plain white t-shirt, the response rate dropped to 33%. And when the runner had on a Liverpool shirt, participants, only 30% of them ran to the person's aid. They basically ignored them. What does the message, the studies show, is that we do have an identity with other people. And think about that this afternoon, this weekend, when you're out, or think about it at work, when you see people in need, and you don't have to look very far on your streets and the like. Are you noticing? And ask yourself, are you noticing because they look like you? Because they're dressed like you? If you're a sports fan, are you more likely to notice someone who's wearing your team shirts versus another team shirt? And certainly this study shows that we most certainly do make a connection with people based on what they look like and what they wear. So that being said, it's hard in today's day and age, especially in a very technology-driven culture where we think, oh, we can do more, we can connect with more people, I can do everything from home, I can, I know my coworker's down the hall, but I can just pick up the phone, or if that, chances are you'll probably just, instant message them, which is, again, very habit-driven. My advice to you today, something that I do, is when somebody calls me, the first question I like to ask is, are you in the building? And they go, well, yeah. And then I ask, can I come by your desk? Can I come by your office? Why? Because I know that if I go to them, that I meet with them in person, not only do they have my undivided attention, but I also have theirs. Because it's kind of comical that people can call us, and I've been guilty of it myself, where you're asking people to help you, but then your screen lights up with messages and pop-ups and the like, and before you realize it, you're on to three other conversations. So it's just a simple tip here, some more advice and research related to this topic on my blog. I like to say there are four words to be a better listener, and you can be a better listener today, and I trust a lot of you already subscribed to this, and these are these four simple words. What I'm hearing is. What I'm hearing is. And it's not a habit that I sort of had effectively built into my daily routine, but I do now, or try to. Why? Because when I'm on the phone conversation or even in a better scenario, I'm actually in person with people in meetings, when people talk, the first four words out of my mouth are always, well, what I'm hearing is. And by saying those four words, it's amazing because people often go, well, that's not what I meant, but I'm glad you asked. Again, simple habits that I want you to put into motion today because I want to help your career. All right, number four, I want to be sensitive to time. Number four leadership habit is delivery, bringing value to others. This is Lisa. As rumor has it, Lisa was named after Steve Jobs' daughter, and in his biography, he did say, "Oh, absolutely, Lisa was named for my daughter." But other folks at Apple said, "No, it's simply a mnemonic for let's invent some acronym." Lisa was the predecessor to the Macintosh. Lisa was set out to be the big product from Apple. Lisa ended up in a landfill in Utah. Lisa sold this computer, as you see here, for about $11,000. And this is in 1982. Lisa ended up being used primarily by, interestingly enough, NASA for one of my favorite subjects, project management. But Lisa was a huge disaster project-wise for Apple. And in fact, the project manager, Steve Jobs, was actually kicked off of Lisa. And he joined another project that was going on simultaneously, which was to introduce the Macintosh. So it worked out well for Apple, of course. But let's not forget that there's always Lisa. Now, I shared four words that I feel can make you and me and all of us better listeners today. But I feel there's five words that every PM stands for project manager, should hear. I also feel that we're all project managers at heart. If you've ever planned a wedding, got married, went to school, built a home, bought a home, bought a car, you're a project manager at heart. And I like to kind of encourage that inner PM in everybody. So here are the five words that every project manager should hear. And I share this because there's an important distinction between project success and project management success. Not every project is a success. Lisa was not a success. Lisa should have been discontinued before it ever ended up in a landfill in Utah for a tax write-off. But the five words that every PM should hear every single day is, thanks for letting me know. Thanks for letting me know. These are five words that every PM should hear. Why? Because news is good, news is bad. News is ugly, news is difficult, but it's news. And the worst indicator of poor project management, again, we're all PMs at heart, is if you don't hear that response from your stakeholders, from your managers, from your customers, your spouses, your kids, thanks for letting me know. News is bad news, but not sharing news is worse. So five words every PM or every professional should hear. And then lastly, number five leadership habit we're going to want to highlight today is study. And this kind of ties everything together, that if you're not evaluating what you're doing and how well it's working, you're not getting any better. Let me plug another book, not for any other reason than, hey, it's a great book. And I stumbled upon it thanks to the algorithm at Amazon, and that is a great book that I figure a lot of people don't know about by he's actually a pianist, but he's also a master piano tuner, I think is the correct term. Thomas Stirner wrote this really great book. It's a short book. You can finish it in a weekend easily, called The Practicing Mind. And the whole book is simply on the premise that, you know, or the notion of, well, when we're kids, it's obvious we need to practice, right? Well, I want to learn how to play the piano. I want to learn how to play baseball. I want to learn how to give speeches and to act. I'm like, so what do? You practice. You learn to coach it. But what do we do when we become, quote, adults? We, if you will, stop practicing. And Stirner's argument is the fact that defies logic, that defies life, that doesn't make any sense to think, oh, well, you're an adult now, so you have to stop practicing. But if you discipline your mind, and for folks who like to kind of highlight or sort of, you know, put into practice sort of Zen-like practices and philosophies, this is a great, great book. Again, The Practicing Mind, which basically reiterates that you have to strive to practice what you do every day, every little detail of it. Great, great resource. So how do you be a better person today? What's that big eye-opening, Woody moment? It's simply this. Ask for feedback. Ask for feedback. Ask for feedback from your manager. Ask for feedback from your customers. Ask for feedback from your spouse, your partner, your best friend, your worst enemy. Ask for feedback. Now, is it painful? Absolutely. You want to get painful feedback? And I put it to the test. I'm glad I did. In my case, ask my wife's BFF, you know, for feedback. You know, if you really want to know how you're doing as a husband and where you can improve, ask your wife's best friend, and you'll get a handful. But I'm glad I did, because it makes me a better person. So if you want to be a better person today, ask for feedback. Ask, how can I be a better husband? How can I be a better employee? How can I be a better project manager? Let me tell you, when you ask, people will tell you. And you know what? That's a good thing. And it's all about growth, and it's all about studying and evaluating your results, which I mentioned. So, as we kind of, I want to be sensitive to time. I'll leave a couple minutes to see if there's any Q&A. My hope today is that I've planted enough seeds that it may inspire you to create some better habits today, or to sort of strengthen existing habits you have as well. And if you're waiting for a sign, here it is. It's right in front of you. I want you guys to know that I did put this out there for you. You may have seen this before. This has been attributed to everyone from Stephen Covey to, you know, Ralph Waldo Emerson, that, you know, when you have you sow a thought, it reaps an act. And that makes sense. But then that act can become a habit. That habit, when put into practice for 66 days or 200 days, whatever the case can be, you reap a character, and that's your character. And when you sow your character, you reap a destiny. But let me conclude with this simple message, that life and today, your career, it's not about being the best and discovered and blogged about it just yesterday, a great quote from Teddy Roosevelt, you know, which said that, you know, comparison is the thief of joy, that if you constantly compare yourself to this person and to this moment and the like, or, well, I bet it'll be better next time, that you're robbing yourself of joy every single day. So, important message, of course, is to enjoy, to appreciate, to recognize this moment, today's moment, what you're learning today, what you're going to learn this afternoon, what you're going to learn this afternoon, the experiences you're going to have with your family, with your friends. But today is all about being better than you were yesterday, and that's the only person you should ever compare yourself to is yourself, not to anybody else. So that concludes my presentation. I'm going to close, and I'll turn it back over to Marianne. I'm not going to talk about it, but some folks do know that I have a career resource called Interview Angel. It's a job interview resource. You can check it out. You can see what other people have to say about it on my on my LinkedIn profile, if you'd like. It's a great resource that's been used by students at U of R, UVA, VCU, JMU, government workforce centers. If you know if anyone's looking for a job, check it out. I threw out a half-off code there. Again, I'm only mentioning it because it's a resource that I know has helped a lot of people, but today's presentation isn't about pushing anything. But my last call to action to all of you is simply this. Let's continue this conversation. This is clearly a one-sided dialogue. I'm humbled that you've taken the time to join me this afternoon on your lunch break. But please, it would mean the most to me to stay connected. Visit, you know, check out my blog if it's interesting you, sign up for it. And I also would love to connect with you on LinkedIn. You connect with me in other places, but my first choice is LinkedIn. If you do send me an invitation, and I welcome it, and I'll accept it, please, you know, put a little note to say, hey, Brent, I was on the webinar and thought I would connect, or good feedback, or hey, here's a suggestion for your webinar next time. That's fine. But do tell me that's how we're connected so that I can make that connection with you. So with that, I'll turn it back over to Marianne.
Well, thank you, Brent. Everyone, as Brent mentioned, you can connect with him by going to his blog at standinspire.com or preferably through LinkedIn. And I want to give a big thank you to Brent for taking time out of his busy schedule to provide this webinar for us today. And let me go to, here we have the slide. I want to let you know that the next Friday Forum will take place in 2 weeks on Friday, September 20th. when Rob Biesenbach, our very first Friday Forum presenter, returns to our webinar series to tell about the 11 deadly sins of public speaking and presentation. So let's see if we have a few minutes for any questions that have come in. Brent, I think they've been answered. Someone asked about habit number 3, which is empathy. And I think we are coming up on 1 o'clock. So I'm going to go ahead and say thank you again, everyone. We appreciate you spending your time with us. I hope that you found Brent's information helpful and that you will start those habits today. I'm going to definitely think about some of those, like asking for feedback. That's an interesting thought. As always, we've been recording today's webinar, and everyone who registered will receive a link to the webinar and an email going out later today. Also, please complete the brief survey included in that email, and that will also pop up when you exit the webinar. Thank you again from Alumni Career Services here at UVA's Alumni Association, to Brent and to our audience. Enjoy your weekend. Be sure to check out our webinar library for any webinars you might have missed, and we'll see you back here in 2 weeks on September 20th.